Welcome to the Ausländer. So, welcome to another episode online of the Ausländer, the podcast thought for bringing experts together and people who is living or has lived in other parts of the world, parts of the world that are not their homeland, let's say like this. Even though you can become other countries can become your home. Today I'm here with very, very special guest, which is actually the first guest that we don't know each other in person. We contacted each other online. You will see clearly why this person is an expert by themselves, but also why it's an expert in a lot of senses. Lea Misan, it's here with me. Hi, Lea.
Hello, nice to be here.
As far as I know, you are originally from Israel, but grown yes. up in Switzerland. You are living in London. You have lived in Canada, in France in between. That's quite a lot of countries.
Yes. Yes. I've traveled a lot.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, that's exactly why this podcast is here. So for people who has lived a lot and a lot of experience, they can explain their life. And I'm really, really happy that that you decided to approach the podcast. And I really encourage other people who are listening to these episodes that if they want to record an episode, this is absolutely a possibility. And I opened the door for a lot of the expert community. So Lea, you are a psychotherapist, expert coach, and right now executive director of a charity. Can you tell us a little bit more of this mix of expertise and on professionally wise?
Yes. So the charity work very much is linked to me being a psychotherapist, mm-hmm. Because it's a mental health charity working with young people and families. I think therapy and coaching goes very well together because therapy is all about looking at your past and finding those patterns about yourself. And coaching is looking at the future and helping you put in place new patterns. So for me, those two parts really go well together.
Definitely, it does. You use generically when you expect, I mean, I want to also we will go a little bit into your personal life. Of course, that's why what the episode is about. But eventually I found really interesting that you are coaching experts, meaning that you are not only with your own experience in there on being an expert and what it's trying to fit into a new country, for example, or the whole experience that it comes when you leave your motherland, et cetera, but also you try to help others to do this.
I think that sometimes we get a little bit stuck in our perspectives and so what I can help with is to look at those attitudes and perspectives that we have, mm-hmm. and what are the things that are wanting to emerge that you're already almost doing, but mm-hmm. that you're not quite aware of that can come out and take you into the way you look at the new place you're in differently.
Sure. Are you focused mainly in people who willingly moved from one country to the other, or you are also having some kind of a mixture of people who contact you in that sense for being you being their coach that has been forced to leave their country, for example, because that's a different approach, no, I suppose?
It is a different approach, but I would say, I got to expat coaching because when I looked at my client base, the people that gravitate to work with me, mm-hmm. I realize that the majority are people that are not in their home country and that they somehow naturally find me.
It is interesting. It's a point that it has come multiple times, I think, we tend to nest when you have a shared experience in that sense.
Yes.
Yes. So let's maybe dig a little bit. I'm pretty sure it will come back to the expert coach at some point, because it's really, really interesting. And I think you're able to share, without names, not only your experiences, but maybe a little bit of what you've learned coaching other experts. But maybe let's start a little bit with yourself. So you were born in Jerusalem, but you said that you were raised in Geneva in Switzerland. Is this an early move, like as a child already, or?
As a child, yes. So I was born in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. But at age 5, we moved to Canada.
Oh.
We stayed in Montreal till I was 9. And then we moved to Switzerland, where I grew up in Geneva, in an international school, right? So I was in school with people who were already out of their home country, all my schooling, basically, from age 9 right through. And then for university, I went to Strasbourg and then England.
And then you stayed after university directly in England, or?
No, I didn't want to stay here. I thought this country didn't compare to Switzerland at all. And I wanted to go back to Switzerland. But I met my husband. I went back to Switzerland and I met my husband. And so the rest is history. I came back to England.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting perspective, because the countries that you've lived on, they are relatively kind of different one to the other. They are not extreme opposites, let's say, but I don't know how much do you remember 5 years old at the end. It's a relative age from Israel and Jerusalem, but it's a big trip. It's really far away to go to Canada, first of all. Do you remember anything of being a kid saying, oh, it was shocking, in the sense of like, I'm arriving to really, really far away from what I considered home right now, until now?
I remember going on strike when we arrived to Montreal, and I looked at this place. It was very different. I was 5 and I didn't want to be there.
Yeah, of course.
And I looked at the stars. The stars were far away. In Israel, the stars feel much closer. And I went on strike. I ate only bananas for a year.
Really? Oh, wow. So you did really strike. Okay, that's nice.
I went on strike. And I think that in a nutshell, it also illustrates what a lot of people go through, right? There's a culture shock when you move.
And you don't need to be 5 years old for that. You can be definitely 35 and move to a new country, and or 40 or 50, it doesn't really matter. The cultural shock that the country can do to you, even if it's the neighbor country, it is enough. You're leaving a lot behind. From that perspective, did it make a difference when you move then from Canada to Switzerland? Because you were still a young girl, a child moving from one who already had done a first move. Because I remember I moved, now I'm in Greece, but I was living in Germany, for example. And my first move, I think the first year of the adaptation of the first time in Germany was harder than the second move, because I already, I don't know, did you felt it like this? I don't know if it's multiplied when you're a child.
Yes, I think it was like that. It took me a long time to settle into Geneva.
Hmm.
Also because I still wanted very much to go back to Israel.
Still at the age, okay.
Still holding that in my head. And because, Geneva is a very international place, and people were coming and they were going, and it didn't quite feel settled. It took about 2-3 years for me to really settle into the place.
Did did being in a in an international school help in that sense? Like,
So I loved my school. It was a wonderful place, but I think that one of the things that children that are in international schools experience is precisely this rootlessness, this not feeling quite at home, right?
Exactly. I can understand that. Yeah. Because actually it supports one to each other. You think like that the fact that you are surrounded by other people who are having the same feelings as you in that sense doesn't allow you to fully integrate into a country?
It doesn't quite allow you to integrate into the country, but you also know that this person is here temporarily. So you don't quite make the same... the friendships you build, the assumption, even though some of them have been lifelong friendships, but as a child, you're assuming that those people are going to be leaving, right? Any moment.
And do you even create this kind of thing, like kind of typical in humans in general, and not only in children, but when you know that something is potentially going to harm you or being a bad experience at the end, you refuse to do that. So you know that generically the majority of your friends in school at some point, their parents are leaving, so they are also leaving. You even yes. reject to be their friends.
Or you become friends, but not too much, right?
Putting a distance in there.
protect yourself.
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting perspective. At even at that age, like that, we are so into that kind of thing. Like we are already understanding that we are protecting ourselves, or I mean at that point I don't think you realize, but when you grow up then you realize that you were doing that because of a behavior at the end. You said then that in Switzerland you were from the age of 9, as far as I remember, until graduation of university.
No, until I was 18.
18.
And then I went to Israel. I was in Israel for 2 years. And then I did the army, and then I came to England for my studies.
It was a mandatory thing for you, as so you maintained your citizenship in Israel, so then therefore you needed to go to the army there.
It's a little bit more complicated because I maintained my citizenship. Mm-hmm. But because I didn't live in Israel after the age of 14, because between 5 and 18 I was out, I didn't have to do the army, but I wanted very much to live in Israel, and so to live in Israel it would have been better to do the army. Mm-hmm. So I very much wanted to go.
So did you have this conception of like from 5 to 18 it keep burning the flame of going back to Israel at some point of time? That's really interesting.
That very much so, and it's the one thing that when I think back, there was like a missed opportunity to be really present with where I was, right? Because there was somewhere always this longing of being somewhere else.
Okay, and it was like you were feeling that you were pretending being someone else because you were living in another country, or because you were not 100% fitting in that environment?
Not that I was feeling like wanting to be someone else, but I wanted to be in a different country, right? I didn't want to be in, I wanted to be in Israel. So that affected how I was in Geneva.
Okay, I understand. So it brought you a different perspective, and maybe you also not only impose your relations with the people because they were temporary, you were also temporary in that country by yourself.
Yes, in my mind, even though I wasn't anything temporary, right? I was there from the age of 9.
A lot of years.
But every year I felt like this is temporary. I'm about to go back.
Mm-hmm. I see. Nice. Did it match the expectations that you had? Like, going back home? Because that's another case. Like, that's the opposite case of an expat, the people going back home and it's not what I expected.
Well, I think that wherever you're going to and from, you always have culture shock.
Yes.
So going back home is also culture shock.
Correct.
So I think it's a good question that you asked. No, I had a very big culture shock because in coming to Israel is when I, so when I was in Geneva, I felt very Israeli.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got to Israel, everybody called me the Swiss chocolate. So, I, you know, it was quite confusing. Yeah, so you create your own culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you end being by yourself an entity of a mixture at the end when you start living in there. I have a really good friend who is living in Germany, or a family is living in Germany, and the whole family is Turkish. He's even German by born. And he always tell me this, like, I feel, even being born in Germany, because of my family being Turkish, I live in between two worlds. And I'm not fully German for the Turkish when I go to Istanbul. Neither I'm fully German for the Germans, even if I've been born here, because my family is Turkish. I can imagine it went more or less into that direction.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. And that's wherever I am in some ways, right?
I think when you have especially lived as a child, in that sense, do you feel that feeling increases more and more? Because I moved when I was already 23 years old, my first movement to a new country. And I eventually didn't spend enough time in Germany to feel myself German, maybe. I didn't spend enough time to feel Greek, maybe. So I still feel from my motherland, and I still feel myself as, I recognize myself as Catalan or from Barcelona or whatever. I would never say I'm from Athens. But I think there is a certain point or a certain environment, which is being a child, which defines you as part of that, or being a lot of years in a place that starts defining you as, okay, I feel more from here than.
Yes. I don't feel that anymore. I've thought about that quite a lot. So I think it's changed for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I've lived in the UK more than I've lived anywhere else now. But I don't feel British.
Makes sense.
I'm Swiss and I'm Israeli and I come from many places and I'm just me. And the sense of home is different. It incorporates all of these places.
And it's difficult to feel confused in that mess. Like, I understand that it's difficult to feel confused in that whole environment. At the same time, I think it's interesting that from the countries that you have lived, you have also lived in Canada, and maybe you don't feel Canadian. You have lived in France, and maybe you don't feel French. Yeah. It is interesting how humans also react to what they feel and what they know, and maybe it's eventually, or I don't know, what is your perspective on what is your experience in that? Like, what defines what it's home and where you feel home, and what it's not home, and what it's really difficult.
I think it's a very personal thing, and each of us defines it slightly differently. But it's something between the places that we attach ourselves to,
mm-hmm.
and how we hold those places within us and our relationships. Yeah. Right. So, you know, some people have told me home is where my friends are, where my family is, where my heart is. And other people have said, no, but this place has something special about it, right? This particular piece of land, or this house, this tree, you know.
And they don't even feel part of a country. They feel part of their own house, and that's their tank. Interesting. Yeah. It's really, really nice. So just coming back quickly to that, you spent 2 years in Israel. You did 1 year, or how many years is the military service? 2 years?
2 years.
The complete 2 years of military service in Israel.
Yeah.
And then...
I think now it's less. I think now they do less. But in my family...
I think so, yeah. I think so. I think the last friend who was going there did 8 months or 8 months, I think so. But he was doing the half military, the charity service right now. So, and then what happened? Like, you finished the military service and you decided to come back?
And then I wanted to study in Israel, mm-hmm. but my paper wasn't very good. And well, it was good, but not good enough for... And I did the international baccalaureate. Mm-hmm. And so when I went to the university, they didn't recognize the papers. And I knew that it was recognized officially by Israel. But when the dean of the faculty told me, we don't recognize it, I was a little bit frozen. I was a bit shocked, a bit too Swiss. I was like, huh, what? And I knew, you know, I knew the law and I knew that it was accepted in Israel, but I accepted what he said. And so I had, my school had applied for me while I was in the army for very good universities in the UK. So I ended up coming to the UK.
Nice. So eventually you tried to stay in Israel for studies. You touched one point which is really recurring in this podcast, which is the language barrier. At this point of time, you're having 20 years old, as far as I understood from the perspective. You passed through a country that, like, Hebrew in Israel. I don't know if you were in the French or the English part of Canada.
We were in Montreal. I went to school where I was in Hebrew, English, and French.
Oh, wow. And then Switzerland, the same. It's one of the countries where everything is spoken. You arrive at a certain age that you were speaking, like, how many languages at the age of 18? It was...
Four languages.
Nice.
Yeah.
It was any barrier for you at some point? Like, or especially, I suppose, when you arrived to Canada the first time, no? Because from...
Yeah, so when I arrived to Canada, I didn't speak a word of English. I can't remember very well how it was, but...
I mean, of course, you were 5 years old.
Yeah, but I learned pretty quickly. Mm. At home, we spoke in Hebrew.
Nice.
In the house. And at school, I studied in English. And then in Geneva, when I went to the shops and stuff, it was in French. So I had three languages, but because I used them in different places for different things, my vocabulary in Hebrew was a home vocabulary. It wasn't for studies. Right.
So you limit more or less your language on where you use it. I completely understand that.
Yes, I'm sure your Spanish also is different because now that you're in Greece for such a long time.
Yes, I mean, I have already the thing that in my home and generically my circles in Barcelona, we speak Catalan. So my Spanish were already kind of school curricular, maybe, or a little bit within a slang sometimes because of relations. But definitely, I mean, it happens right now that I arrive to Greece and I try to talk with someone in Spanish and I put words of Greek in the middle or German or whatever, because I don't remember the original word in even my mother language, my mother tongue, which is just like really weird. But yeah, it happens. Yeah. It happens.
Well, that used to happen to me all the time. I would speak, I would start in one language and slip into the next without noticing. Yeah.
I think it happens, and when you're a kid, it's even more normal that it happens to you, and you say, "I don't know, I understand it. Why the rest of the of my class doesn't understand this?" No. So you were saying that you went to United Kingdom just when you finished the 2 years of military service in Israel. Did you went directly for psychotherapy at that point of time?
No, I went to study law. I studied international business law.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then I worked in the city for a little while and didn't quite suit me. So I changed things around.
Directly in London, or you studied?
London, yeah. I studied at the London School of Economics.
Okay. That's also a big change, no, I suppose. London, it's a big city. Well, Montreal, it's also a big city, but I suppose.
Well, it's a bigger city. It was a very big change. Mm. And the interesting thing was coming out of Israel, even though I was always reading in English and you know, my studies were all in English, I came here and the accent is different. And I didn't understand anything in my lectures. I would go to lectures and I didn't understand anything that the lecturer would say.
Yeah, we still know. I suppose you are now absolutely used to it after so many years in UK, but it still happens to me sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. Certain accents, because there are so many accents here in the UK. Yeah,
it is. I think it's one of the beauties of it at the end. Like, if everyone would have the same accent everywhere, what a boring world we will live. No, there is no spark in learning any language then.
Yes, and we need all the different idioms and the special words that we have in different languages.
Yeah, I totally agree. So you studied there for the degree, and where it's Strasbourg and France fits in all of this ecosystem?
So I was studying in the UK, and then I did 1 year of that studies. I did it in Strasbourg.
Oh, nice.
So I spent a year in Strasbourg, and it was closer to home anyway. But I liked Strasbourg very much because it's like a place that has both German and French.
Yes.
A culture.
Yes.
And so it's a very special place.
And it's absolutely beautiful from architectural perspective, and it has its magic. I completely agree. If it's okay for you, I would propose that we do the short break now and then we come back. Perfect. All right, so we are back. We were just talking about the year that you spent in France, in Strasbourg, and in these studies in the UK, like different cultures, but at the same time, it's still Europe, let's say, like this. It's more or less in this package, but you said something kind of interesting at that point of time, which was Strasbourg shares this kind of culture between them. Like, it brings a feeling being French as a French city, but it has this Germanized or German vibe also somehow. As a person who you lived in multiple places, like, I suppose you've seen that outside, like in the case of a Strasbourg, but also inside yourself, like you're living in different cultures, how it's coping this for you.
Yes. That's right. That's a nice way to put it. Yeah. I think Strasbourg went back and forth, right, between being in France and in Germany. And so there's something about Strasbourg where those parts are integrated. And so, you know, I haven't thought about it very often before, but there's something about that helped me integrate.
Okay.
Right. As a person, because bringing together all these different pieces of myself, right, the part that's Swiss and organized and Together with this Israeli, very feisty, direct, you know, and with this English part that I've cultivated over the last, I don't know, two, three decades, there's something about bringing those things together to make me,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not this part and that part, but it's a whole.
Totally. How do you do that? Like, eventually, that's one of the big questions. How do you put these parts together that they still work? Is that a process that you think it takes like a long, long time, or it's just self-reflection and patience to...
I think it's all of that. It's a daily thing. It's like every day you're putting those things together, right? Every day that you do something and then you catch, oh, that's that part of me that is bringing that, right? And then you're holding them together. But I think also the reflection and the noticing our histories and what comes up in ourselves from that history, it is an important part of being able to hold it together.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense that you don't need to only try to puzzle things together, but try to understand the past to make your own future, let's say, like this. It sounds really idealized and romantic, but it is part of a process. Have you encountered in yourself the moment where your own culture, it's shocking with the culture where you are living?
You mean my internal culture?
Exactly.
The one that I live in.
Yeah, exactly.
Say one more thing about that before I answer.
Okay. So the thing that you are part of multicultural fact or a multicultural puzzle that it's bringing pieces together doesn't directly erase personality, doesn't erase It needs to be an add-on on who you are eventually, and not the stereotypes of countries by stereotypes of countries. No, I mean, I think
absolutely. So who I am is expressed differently in one culture and in another.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still something in common that is being expressed, right?
All right.
So I think. That in a lot of ways was the piece that took me the longest to address, right? Because when I didn't quite put myself in the culture map of the country that I was in, it was reflected back to me immediately. And I think that that's the case for so many expats, right? That desire to fit in, to blend into the culture that they're in. And yet we can't quite do that. We can show interest in that culture. We can be with it, accompany it. Mm-hmm. We can share moments with it, but we can't quite fit in anywhere, really. Right? We can just bring ourselves.
Well, that's exactly what we were saying before, and somehow, no, even if you go back, what happens is that where the country that you left or the culture that you left 15 years ago, 7 years ago, 4 years ago, it doesn't really matter. Like, your friends are not the same, the same way that you are not the same. Your family, it's not the same, the same way that you are not the same, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So moving back, it's a phrase that we consider as, oh, I'm moving back, everything will be easy. And it's, I think, sometimes misunderstood completely. Moving back means moving, and moving means cultural shock.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Wherever, but I think every time you do that moving to someplace and then back again, every time that shift becomes a little bit easier.
Mm.
Not because you don't have culture shock, because you still do, but just because you learn to expect the culture shock, right? And you become more fluid with it.
Do you think this comes also together with the filtering of life in general, like through the process of moving to a country or to moving to a new culture? Yes, the cultural shock will be there, but you're learning how to cope with it. But at the same time, maybe you have learned what are your best hobbies or who are still your best friends at that point of time. So you already filter and you know who will be always there. If you have your hobbies absolutely clear and you have a job, for example, one of the cases that I kind of see a lot with the people who I interviewed, it makes a lot of difference if you're going to a place where you know that you have a job versus a place that you know that you go with one hand behind and the other in front, as we say in Spanish. Does it really has to do only with the culture shock, or really it has to do with it you learn experience-wise and everything? It's because you're getting older also and getting experience in this life.
For sure, you're also getting experience. We're all the time doing that. I think, though, that the expat has that experience, intensifies and learns it. It's like you're in a pressure cooker. You have to learn it, right? Whereas a person who just is in their home country all the time, they might still learn it, but they might not have the same pressure. They have the luxury of they can learn it as and when they choose to.
And you think that's because there is a net of security around your homeland because of family, friends that they have been created over years, or it's because your culture it's there behind it? What is the reason why you think that?
When you're within a culture and you stay put, you don't have as quickly that opportunity to notice all your assumptions. Why? Who's thinking the thoughts that you're thinking? Why are you thinking those thoughts? Where does that come from? You don't get the opportunity to test any of your beliefs. But when you are change culture, you're no longer within the aquarium, within the fishbowl, right?
You
have to test all your assumptions and beliefs all the time because they're necessarily different from where you are.
It really comes with challenging and going out of your comfort zone, which is another traditional sentence of get out of your comfort zone, but that's really what it brings you to be able to adapt easily or faster to other situations.
Yes, I think so.
It's an interesting approach. Do you think that eventually there is a factor of inner character mixed into it? Because I really think that I have friends or myself who have the capability to adapt themselves easier in certain circumstances than other people who will take much more time than others. I think that's more or less clear, but how do you help a person that it's not able to change that fast? Let's say your partner, your best friend who is moving with you. How do you do that?
So I think that's a really important point, and not all expats are going to be as adaptable as you, right? As some of them will have moved because of work, but without having considered that what it actually means for them. In fact, most people that travel don't know what it means until they're in it. And they don't know whether they're going to be adaptable or they're going to be rigid in their thinking. And so I think offering a different perspective, acknowledging the perspective that they come from, that they bring to the table, but also showing them another way of looking at it. We're really standing for their perspectives, helps them to shift.
Okay.
Right? It helps them to change. I think that expats have an opportunity in today's world. And that's also another reason why I'm so interested in working with expats. Because being an expat helps develop these skills of being adaptable, of being more fluid, of being able to stand for your own perspective, but also move to another perspective. You know, and we learn that from doing this. Those are skills that our world needs today in this time of a lot of polarization. Our world needs people who can do that.
Not only in the sense of professional, but in general, like things are changing so fast that if you are not adaptive, this is a difficult world. I mean, and it's normal. I don't know. I'm coming from a generation who grown up nearly with a smartphone on their hands. It's not true. I mean, I saw the phones growing up, but eventually we all end having a smartphone. We all understand when they talk about developers, designers, absolutely all the infrastructure around IT. But you put TikTok in front of me, for example, and I don't understand it. And I'm already assuming that there is things in the future that I will not understand, the same way that it happens with my parents, with my grandparents, with absolutely everyone. Does that make us less adaptive? Like, is the time going so fast that we are able to adapt to different cultures, but we are not able to adapt to technology or other factors that are around?
Well, technology is also like a culture, right? It's a new culture that's being created in front of our eyes. I think the speed of it is making it hard to keep up, right? To keep the pace. And I suppose that's going to happen to all of us, right? I also find like Instagram and Snapchat and I don't know what's going on over there. I know it cognitively, but I can't keep up with it, right? Because of that pace.
And I think there is a factor in there also that it's that there is no time. So a culture like a German culture or the Swiss culture or a British culture, you enter into it and it might take you 1 year to adapt to that. It's okay. In 1 year, you adapt to it. In 1 year, TikTok or Instagram or Snapchat disappears because there is something else coming in and you are finalizing to interact with that and adapting yourself into that and it's already gone. Like, it's so fast that it's scary at some points. Like, you don't arrive to adapt to it.
I think that's true. And also, all this social media hype is changing our brains and making us have less attention. Right? There's more and more people with attention deficit. And it's also because of this speed.
Yep. It's a changing world in that sense also. Like there is a lot of instant, no? I think it's clear from even from my generation to other generations eventually. Like we want, even us, generation of the 90s, we want things, even the people from the 80s want things already now. 1 second of waiting, it's too much for absolutely anything. For children born in the 2000s, that's even more. Like, they need the thing, they get tired of absolutely everything much more faster than us. Do we will lose the concept of adapting ourselves in that sense, because if we are changing all the time,
there's a risk of that, right? There's a risk also that if we only, for example, on our phones, we receive only the news and the social media and stuff that fits with our perspective, then what are we going to be adaptive to? Right? We don't get to see the other perspective. Yeah. So there's a big need to stay with those skills and to give them value and remind ourselves of it, because the polarization that's happening now everywhere, right? There's, you know, in politics, democracy everywhere is 49-51. But that already is a symptom of all this social media silos that we don't hear each other. We're not interested. But the expat learns about being adaptable and being curious and learning about the other side, right? The other in terms of culture.
You are forced somehow also, which is part of the experience, but you are forced to I would not call it adapt or die, which sounds really hardcore, but eventually, like, it is a little bit what it is. I mean, if you don't adapt into a country, you will leave that country after a certain amount of time if you don't achieve to adapt to that culture. Yes. You're forced as an expat.
Yes, absolutely.
What is the most common, I don't know if you can share this information as a coach, actually. I mean, what is the most common question that an expat who comes to your for you to help them ask? What is the most common thing?
I think people often find me when their patterns come from a different culture, and the culture that they are operating in, working in, living in, their new family, they don't quite know how to marry those two patterns or belief structures or values. How do those two things sit together? And so it comes back again to adaptability and fluidity. I remember one client, very successful in the UK, came from another country. But when she went back home, she would bring the values and the skills that she has from this country over there. But over there, she wasn't looked at with those skills. She was looked at as a woman that needs to sit quiet and serve the men, right? Okay. And so how to go between those two cultures is quite a challenging thing to even imagine, right? And so that's one example. And another example is of a man who lives in the UK, but he's also the head of a family that's on the other side of the world in an Asian culture.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so how can you be a father to children in London, right? In an international marriage, right? Mm-hmm. And be the head of a family in someplace in Asia, right? With totally different values, totally different way of running a family. And hold the tension between the two. And so I help in those kinds of situations.
So you have a lot of dichotomy of culturality between people. Like people who doesn't feel 100% into a culture where they are living, or people who are feeling from both cultures and don't know how to compensate one to the other. Eventually, your clients are not people who are expats who are trying to understand which is their best country to live. Like, it's not...
No, it's more for their personal development, or, for example, the value that they are expressing or the behavior that they are expressing in this culture is accepted over there, but over here it isn't, or the other way around. And so how do they manage that?
Nice. Is it really different from psychotherapy in the sense of like balancing things, balancing emotions, for example?
So I work with both of those together. I don't see myself as a coach and a psychotherapist separately. I bring those two things together.
Of course.
So self-regulation is part of that, right? Integrating into yourself is part of that, and how you operate in the world is more something to do with, I think, coaching.
Okay. Nice. It sounds like, I mean, you might meet thousands of people because of coaching experts. You might have heard a lot of experiences, a lot of things that are coming, which is a little bit what I do sitting here while I interview people in this podcast. And it's kind of funny because at the end, I'm no one giving them support or help. Of course, it's a channel for them to express whatever they want and whatever they want to explain at the end. Of course, it's not all their life. Not everyone explains all their life. It's a recorded session that will be public. So I found something that it's a pattern that it's kind of interesting in majority of the guests. And it's that eventually, with the time that they have been inside of a culture, they are start to adapt things, which is absolutely normal. But there is still always remainings of the cultures that they have left behind. It is really difficult to find someone who says, oh, no, this guy has become from German to Greek 100%. I've never seen that. Yeah. Do you agree with that?
100% I agree with that. Yesterday I was sharing with someone how I had a situation yesterday which showed, oh, I still make this mistake with English. Right. I asked a question, is this good or bad? And the person said neither. And so I thought, okay, so it's new, it's not good and it's not bad. But the English person brought to my attention yesterday, no, when he says neither, it means it's not good. Right? Not saying that it's good means it's bad.
Exactly.
And that, because I'm more direct, and in that moment I forgot that the person speaking to me is not right,
that there is another culture and another language culture expressing themselves in there. Yes. Which is another globe that it's really interesting also, how people, depending on their cultural background and their whole environment, are able to express themselves in a way or another. And a single word from one person, it's absolutely different meaning for another.
Yes. So we'll still catch ourselves making those mistakes, right?
All the time. Absolutely, all the time. It's but I do mistakes in English, which is a language that I've been talking for the last, I don't know, 7 years professionally, life-wise, because it's the language that we need to talk when eventually you're an expert, you end falling down to the easy solution of speaking English. I sometimes still pronounce words in English the same way that I used to do back in Barcelona. And I know that it's not the correct pronunciation.
Yes, of course. But it doesn't matter, right? Because you're just expressing yourself.
Yes, exactly. And I find it okay. I mean, I am not here, or I'm not talking with my friends to be doing the, I don't know, an exam. I'm just here to express myself. And if they understand it, it's all right. And it's actually something that I also wanted to ask you at the end. Do you think there is too much pressure on other, on the countries and cultures comparing themselves to other cultures? Like, there is too much of, or you do things like this and we don't do things like this, so you should stop doing these things.
Yeah, I do. I from a very early age, from the international school, I always thought our diversity matters. It's our richness. And I don't want everybody in the world to do things the same way. I want us to have our traditions and our cultures, so that I can go and meet you and find out what your culture is like, and because it will be different. And I think there is a lot of pressure for us to be like all American or all English speakers, or, you know, I like that the French, for example, really stand for their culture. I think that's a, so they might not do it in a way that everyone likes, but I think it's really important that each culture is valued and given the space to be heard and shared.
Even in the countries itself, no? So I think reinforcing cultures in countries, like France reinforcing their own culture, it's okay. Like, everyone should be reinforcing that self. But what I miss sometimes is that there is this respect for cultures in other countries. Like, I come from whatever and my culture does this. I also brought to my mind this a lot of times, and where is the limit of these cultures? It's a really difficult topic to solve. It's really, really difficult topic. Do we accept sexism because it's part of a culture itself? Do we accept certain behaviors because it's part of a culture itself? Where do we arrive with the exchange of culturality?
I think that's a very good question. It's a very loaded question, right? I think also inside countries. So, you know, you're from Catalonia, and that whole piece of having that and the language accepted by Spain, and in the UK for Wales. You know, today Wales decided that Mountain Wales, which is called Snowdon in Snowdonia, they've changed the name back to the Welsh name. Mm-hmm. Which I can't pronounce exactly, but they're changing the name because our diversity matters.
Yes.
Because they don't want to pick up English names.
Because they have the culture behind it, that it was valuable and it doesn't harm.
Yeah. And so cultivating that, encouraging that is very important.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, unfortunately, we are running a little bit out of time. I don't know if you know it, but I always ask two questions at the end of the each episode. The first one, it's any recommendation that you would give to expats or persons who are planning to move to a new place?
Mm-hmm. I would say... go and explore it first, just with curiosity, without any afterthought, without comparing it to where you come from. Be open with it.
Nice. I also recommend that a lot. And the second question, which is a little bit more for yourself or whoever you want, I always give a little bit of the opportunity to all the guests to self-promote or promote any other projects from friends, family, from yourself that you want to use the podcast to promote and say, oh, I want to use this channel to say, hey, here I am.
What I'd like to speak about is a book I've written during lockdown called Emerging Fears, which is a personal development book, based on 36 dream figures. And it also helps with being more adaptable and fluid. And so it's coming out in the spring.
Nice. That sounds lovely. Like it will be coming out probably later than the episode it's released. But eventually, at some point of time, all the links to wherever it's available, the book will be there. Of course, the title of the book and the author, you have it here, so you know where to search for it. It will be also down in the descriptions and the video and the podcast itself. So you can maybe bookmark and put a date of release in your calendar for when it comes out and go and buy this book. Leah, it has been an amazing interview. I really loved to talk with you and bring your perspective into the podcast.
Thank you so much, Mark. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.